Welcome to Let's Talk About Test Baby, a fortnightly show where we go ding when there's stuff. I'm Jem Hill, and I'll be your host. Hello listeners, and welcome to episode 77 of Let's Talk About Test Baby. This week it's an interview episode, and I have Dan Billing on the show. Dan Billing is a security tester and a Doctor Who fan, and I know he's tutting at me because I made a new Who reference in the intro and not an old Who reference. But I've not really watched any old Who, so I'm not that sorry. But yeah, I'm not going to faff much here. Let's get straight to it. But I will say before we go, check out the show notes that come with this episode, because there are a ton of links to resources and tools and Dan's GitHub, which he talks about, which are just an amazing starting point for security testing. And with that, let's get on with the show. So this week on the show, I've got Dan Billing. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Jem. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very well, thank you. It's good to be speaking to you.
Yes, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, I've been wanting to for a long time, and it's become one of my favourite testing podcasts. You were mentioning when we were talking before we started recording about how it, you know, it's quite short and easy to digest, and it's one of my favourites because of that reason. But also, you have good guests and interesting insight on a lot of different topics, so...
Thank you so much.
I enjoy it very much.
I've wanted to get you on the show for a long time as well, so I'm glad we finally managed to make it work. Do you want to give a quick intro to yourself if people aren't familiar with you?
Sure. So my name is Dan Billing. I am now working at Medidata in London. However, for the previous 3 years, I was working at New Voice Media in Basingstoke. And it was during that time that I started becoming more engaged with the testing community, in a more active sense, rather than just attending workshops and meetups. I started, coming up with my own content to present. So I've done quite a few talks and workshops over the last few years, mostly around security testing. Although I did do a talk at Nordic Testing Days called The Testing of Fear, and that was probably my toughest talks to do because it was very personal. And it was talking about using your emotions as heuristics. But I was reflecting also on the security learning that I did. And over the last I've been testing for about 16 years. But the last 3 years, 4 years have been the most challenging, not only from a technical point of view, from the skills I've been learning, but also from a personal point of view in terms of my engagement with testing and trying to push my thinking, career, thoughts, and my engagement with testing further, rather than it just being a job, to make it an enjoyable a profession, an enjoyable career for me, rather than it just being a thing I do during the day. So that's, but most of that's been focusing on security. So in the last couple of years, which is a passion of mine. But I just wanted to talk today about some of the challenges and issues and ethics and some of the learning I've done around that, if that would be interesting to your listeners.
Well, it'll be interesting to me, and that's the yardstick that I use.
Okay, cool.
This podcast is all for me. The fact that other people enjoy it is a happy coincidence.
Well, that's a good thing. It's a bit of a busman's holiday or something for you. That's fantastic. So.
No, but I'm fascinated by security testing just because, I mean, I know we spoke about it before, there is the whole mindset of a security tester, and also how it relates to the ethics of actually doing some of this stuff and how you find places to learn. I know there's a few different resources and tools out there where you can do this stuff without too much fear of being unethical, essentially.
Indeed. I was running a workshop at my office yesterday, and the question of ethics came out and it was quite a strong theme during the session. So one of the things I talk about is, and this is going to be different for every organisation you work for, whether you're an employee or whether you're a contractor or whether, you're doing it for fun or you're learning. One of the core things is ensuring that you have buy-in from your team, from your management to do security testing. it's a good thing to be doing because it helps expose risk in your applications. It helps expose potential vulnerabilities in your applications, but also it is quite a sensitive topic. And depending on the domain that you're in, now I work in a medical, you know, clinical trials sector, and it's a very sensitive topic for that kind of business because you're dealing with things like intellectual property and client and personal data of patients and the clinical trials themselves. So in a clinical trial, you call patients subjects, and they're the subjects of a test, essentially, so a new drug or device. And the software that I work on helps support that clinical trial. So it can use a lot of different sensitive data. Now, I remember listening to one of your podcasts earlier about data and the types of data that you use, and how risky it is to use certain types of data and creating your own or using production data. And it's not something we can easily do in our organisations, although something we'd like to be able to do is use production or production-like data to help us do security testing or any other kind of testing. The other issue we've got is disclosure. How much do we let people know that organisations let people know that they have or have had security problems, because you then have issues around trust. So do people trust your applications? Do people trust your business? It can affect reputation. If you think back to the TalkTalk floor a few months ago or a few years ago now, you know, their reputation was damaged, but it's because they weren't proactive in talking about the problems and they weren't proactive in responding to the problems that they had when they were hacked. So, you know, a lot of it's to do with communication and trust and reputation. But then you've also got the legal compliance and financial side of security problems as well. So if you're working at an organisation such as a bank or an e-commerce site, you're having to deal with things like PCI, another legal and compliance. Yeah, PCI is a big deal. It's really important.
It really is. I'm so glad that the current company you work at, we tell all our clients to... We don't do server-side. It's all through Sage Pay, because I worked with... PCI is just really... Well, it has to be awkward and difficult, but it just is.
It does appear quite cumbersome when you look at it, because you have to do monthly testing, and then whenever you make a change to a PCI environment, you've got to test every single release. Mm-hmm. And then there's got to be at least an annual or quarterly audit of those processes. Because, you know, you need to make sure that you remain compliant, because if a business loses their compliancy, if any compliancy, then it can mean a loss of business for them, because, you know, certain organisations, they can't trade in certain areas without that compliance. So, you know, bank card companies won't let them trade and use card payment systems without being PCI compliant, for example. So, you know, and there are a number of different compliances that people have to, adhere to, such as health, data protection acts of various companies and organisations, and also things like, there's data protection from a sort of a governmental point of view as well. So a lot of that comes in from governments and government-led organisations. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. So I like try and inculcate an attitude of being proactive about the problems that you find and how to look for security issues, but also being mindful of some of the legal frameworks that you have to work within in order to do this. And that's going to vary from company to company. So, not everyone has the same context. I understand you work in a lot in agency work. So yes. I would wonder what level of security testing you would need to do for your customers, when I know you've mentioned before how focused they are on the front end, how focused they are on the UI, how it looks and feels and how performant it is versus how secure it might be.
Absolutely. Like I said, a layer of that for all our e-commerce sites is taken away because we say we don't support server-side So there are two ways of taking payments. You either take it on the server that the site's on, and then that gets passed on to the merchant, or it's done all through the payment gateway. So SagePay or whoever handles it all, and we do it, so SagePay or whoever handles it all.
Yeah.
So there's a layer of that abstracted away, but we do, we have had some clients, and we do have some clients that have a lot of personal data that we need to make sure it's secure. We, for a lot of pen tests, we have third-party like companies that will do pen tests for us.
Yep.
If it's something that we have to have a certain amount of compliance, just because we don't have the skill set within our company at the moment to handle that ourselves.
I was going to say, that brings me on to one of my main points, is that, you know, we rely on third-party companies to do a lot of pen testing for us. Mm-hmm. And that's good, because they have a lot of domain knowledge in that space, and they can leverage a lot of, you know, deep skills and deep experience in security. But there's no reason why testers and development teams can't start, including those skills in their day-to-day work as part of their definition of done, as part of their test coverage, as part of their development practices.
Absolutely. I mean, there are certain things that we do as practice. And also, when the first time I worked on a project that we had the external party do the pen test on, I just sat there with the report that came out of it and made notes and figured out if there's anything I could do, like within the definition of done, really quickly, like the easy stuff, like if I got bug magnet or the naughty strings thing, and if I could do that kind of stuff myself, just to learn and just to try and catch it earlier.
Yeah, you mentioned in a podcast that you actually created your own bug magnet configurations.
Yes.
And were any of those security related?
I wonder. They were not. That was one. I need to get back into doing that, actually. Because bug magnet does ship with some already.
Yes, it does.
I've not actually made any of my own security-based ones yet, though.
So I have two that I can share with you and your listeners if they're interested.
Oh, that'd be great.
I think it's on my GitHub page, but if it's not, I will upload it to my GitHub and share it with you. So basically, I've created a SQL injection or a injection extension, so beyond the extension that it has already, and also a cross-site scripting filter evasion one. So basically, a lot of applications will already have a lot of methods to prevent cross-site scripting and SQL injection, but the, you know, some of the filter evasion techniques that you can get past some of those cross-site scripting protection. So for example, if it's looking for a script tag, you can get around it by, say, using an image tag instead, for example, and upload the malicious code using a script tag, using an image tag instead of a script tag. And there's lots of different ways you can do that. So I can make that available to you and to your listeners. You know, you can put it in your show notes if that's something interesting to you. So
it would definitely be interesting to me. Personally, we have a lot of clients who really like iframes, or they have third-party integrations that scripts and stuff like that. So anything around cross-site scripting and trying to make sure that we are still being secure and giving clients the flexibility when it comes to third-party integrations and stuff like that is something that I'm interested in, just because I come across it so often.
Yeah. I what I'm finding is that a lot of the testers that I work with are really excited to learn about these things, these skills, because they're interested in skilling up and developing their careers. But also, I'm also finding that, conversely, some companies are wary of security and security testing. They are worried about resource and whether they've got enough resource, or whether it's something they should be doing, or whether it's something they should be giving to a third party, or whether they should be doing it at all. You know, it's my view that security is everyone's problem, from, you know, your receptionist letting the wrong people into the building through to the CTO who's responsible for all the technology at an organization. So, and how that technology is secured, you know, and how you implement changes and how you implement infrastructure and how you implement software. So, it can go from the most mundane thing, like preventing someone from accessing your office, like a delivery person mm-hmm. who shouldn't be there, or a painter or a decorator that's that's pretending they're trying to steal stuff, or you know, someone that's come around to water all the plants, through to people that make decisions at an architectural and corporate level about how your security is implemented in the organisation. And it's important that, you know, developers and testers are aware of these things, that they're aware of what they can do, even at a small level, such as, you know, if you're testing a new form or a field, don't just try boundary value analysis. Don't just try random characters. What you can do is you can try things like buffer overflows. So that goes beyond boundary value analysis to literally overflowing a field or a form or a request to see what error conditions it produces. Or if it's, say, a login page or some kind of form that you're filling in, try a SQL injection. Try a cross-site scripting attack. If you're uncertain of what the syntax should be, then, you know, all it requires is a simple Google to say, you know, look on things like W3C Schools or the OWASP websites. OWASP, the Open Source Web Application Security Project, has a truckload of resources available to everybody who wants to learn about security. And they have a whole suite of tools that are available to you, which are usually free. Or, you know, they're free in terms of cost, but, you know, it might take time to learn and implement. So the cost is in the time to you. So you've got to balance up, you know, the skills that you want to learn versus how much resources and time you have. So one of the things I've done is I've tried to work with testers and developers in my teams that I've been in before and what I'm in now to do things like bug bashes. Or do coaching alongside a tester, learning a specific tool or skill. Or yesterday and the day before, I was running an internal workshop called Security Awareness, where I talk about things like threat modeling and vulnerabilities, specifically the OWASP Top 10, and where I talk about ethical hacking techniques, and I look at how browsers can be used to perform basic security testing techniques without the use of complicated tools. So, you know, it all starts small and then you can grow from there.
Yeah, I know when I first started looking at this kind of stuff, there was because it can get quite complex because it is a complex topic, but just knowing just things like threat modeling, and so to know what I need to look for almost.
Mm-hmm.
Is something that was my first kind of big hurdle to get over, which is why I found the third-party pen test report really useful in a way, because it's like, well, if this is what they're doing, at least that gives me a start into what we know are the threats that they're looking for and, you know, in this domain that I'm currently in.
So when I'm looking at threats and modelling threats to our system, I tend to like to phrase them as a question. So instead of, are we vulnerable to cross-site scripting or SQL injection, I phrase it like this: can someone get access to user data? Can I bypass a username and log on? Can I steal someone else's session information? You know, I phrase it as a question like that. I don't focus necessarily on the vulnerabilities first. I focus on what the possible threats might be first. And then from that, I develop test ideas. So if I'm saying, can I breach user credentials? I would then spin off and do, a brute forcing attack. Or I might try SQL injection on there. Or I might try and steal credentials from the browser. So if there's any stored credentials in cookies, for example. Or is there anything in the URL that indicates who the person is and what they're trying to do? So these are all places that people can start when they try and, you know, ask questions of their applications, is phrase it like phrase the threat as if it's a question, as if it's a use case. As a hacker, can I do X, Y, or Z? Or as a user, is my data at risk? So I like to spin it around like that, and it makes it easier for me to then generate test ideas by doing it that way.
Yeah, that's a good way to start. It's just kind of, if it is getting into that mindset of what information can I get out of the site if I wanted to take advantage of it or if I want to exploit it in some way.
Yeah, one of the big things you can do is you just simply open the browser developer tools and see what the requests and responses are doing. So let's say you were navigating around a site and the headers told you what version of the web server that it was on. Say it's Apache or Windows Server, Windows Web Server. You can then find out, do a simple Google search to see what vulnerabilities there are in that particular version of the web server you're using. Ideally, you shouldn't even be exposing that in the headers. Some people do. So, and then what you can also do is, you know, looking at the underlying infrastructure of the application. So you can then use that information to find out, say, for example, what version of JavaScript you're using. Is it Node? Is it Angular? Is it jQuery? And from that, you can look at what versions of that you're using and determine what vulnerabilities there might be for that particular version of the, you know, the JavaScript framework or whatever other kinds of, you know, content management system you're using. Drupal, for example, or WordPress, they all have their own specific vulnerabilities. And hackers will use their knowledge of those particular frameworks to identify particular types of attacks that they might want to do. Us as testers and as developers, we need to be coding defensively against that. So we also need to understand the infrastructure and be building tests to support that. So, and then you can derive a whole set of tools that might be useful for you from those tests as well. So proxies, for example, packet sniffers, or port tools like Zenmap or Nmap. That it, you know, expose open ports and things like that. That's also useful to do. Digital fingerprinting and things like that.
It is just that first step. Once you've got that first step, then you can go. There's so many different ways you can go. It's just that first step. And just opening the dev tools is something that you can do basically anywhere.
Yeah, every tester should be opening the dev tools on their browser. And if they're not, I would worry. you know, it's something we all can do. And it's just maybe that they're not aware of what those tools can do. And it just needs a little bit of exploration, a little bit of experimentation with those tools to see how effective they might be.
Yeah, I mean, it even has a security overview now in DevTools.
It does in Chrome and I believe Firefox as well.
Yeah.
So Firebug used to be an extension that used to be the get, but now all the functions and features of Firebug are now built into Firefox by default. So you don't need to install a separate tool, but there are some great additional tools you can get which are very helpful, such as proxy switches. So proxy switches will automatically change the proxy of your browser, so that if you're using tools like Zattack Proxy or Burp Suite or Fiddler or Charles Proxy, then you don't have to go into the browser settings to change them manually. You just configure what proxies you want in, say, Foxy Proxy, and then it will switch them for you automatically, just at a click of a button. There are other tools like Edit This Cookie or other cookie editors, which will allow you to have better exposure of cookies and interrogate them in a much clearer way. You can also copy them and reuse them in other sessions to see whether the cookies are reusable or if they expire, if they have very long expiry dates, or if they don't expire at all, or if they're not insecure, or if they're not HTTP only, for example. So you can use cookie editors to do that. And then there's the proxy tools that I mentioned, like Zap and Burp and Charles and so on, where you can literally intercept requests made to and from the browser to the web server and back again, tamper with them, observe them, and in some of those tools actually launch attacks and use spidering tools against them, and they will simulate or actually perform attacks, allowing you to get an idea if there's any vulnerabilities there. I then use the reports from those tools to help me derive more testing. So I, you know, once I've done a scan, I'll then plan exploratory testing based on those results. So that they're a useful oracle for security testing.
So we've spoken a bit about the tools. I'm wondering if it's worth moving on to the ethics of where you can practice this stuff and what you need to be careful of when you want to start practicing this kind of this kind of stuff, this kind of testing?
Sure. So depending on where you are in the world, certainly in the UK and in Europe and the United States, it's actually illegal to perform hacking on any production system when you don't have permission to do so. So even if you're an internal stakeholder, you're a tester on a team, you're a developer on the team, you really need to seek permission before you do any kinds of testing of a security nature. It's about the only kind of testing where I would seek permission first, because it can lead you to legal trouble. What you can do, though, if you want to start practicing these skills, is that you can use any number of fake sites which have security flaws in them, which then you can go and train yourself on how to do that. So there's quite a few out there that will allow you to train on them. One of the favourites that I first started with was Gruyere, which is the same as the Swiss cheese with lots of holes. It's made by Google, and it's a great training platform for security flaws. And then there's a website called Supercar Showdown, which is made by Troy Hunt for his Hack Yourself First training. So you can use that site to train yourself in lots. There's about at least 50 or 60 vulnerabilities on that site of different kinds. And, you know, there's API flaws on there where all the data is exposed. There's SQL injection, there's cross-site scripting. And then there's, fake banking sites out there, which are very helpful. So you can try things like stealing money from the fake banking site and putting it into your own account. There's a few out there. There's Alturo Mutual, which I used, which was an IBM-built site, which has all sorts of flaws in it. And there's an ASP version of that and a Java version of that site, so you can see how different flaws are implemented in different code bases. I've also built one of my own. It's called Ticket Magpie, and it's available on GitHub. I built that with a guy called David Hertanian, who works for Coderance in London, and he's a Java developer, and he helped me build it, and I helped him understand the flaws and implementing those. It's still lots of room for improvement, but it's basically a ticket site to buy concert tickets, and they're safe places you can go and learn without getting in trouble. So when you're actually doing this in your own company, you really need an isolated environment where you're not going to harm anyone. So it can be a copy of production, or it can be a specially built test environment with test data on it, but it needs to be separate from production. It ideally needs to be separate from other test environments, so you're not harming other testers and testing that's happening, and you're not impeding on if you're in a continuous delivery environment, it's important that you have a lot of uptime in your environments. So having an isolated environment where you can do security testing safely is a good thing to ask for. It's just a question of getting those environments spun up. So you can use things like AWS or Docker to help you. And there are a number of other sort of ways you can create environments locally on your machine, for example. So then you're definitely not going to harm anyone. But there's a question of how valid the data sets are going to be on a locally hosted environment. So it's worth considering that when you start testing for security. From an ethical point of view, it's important to do that. So it's kind of, you were talking about in a previous podcast about when, you know, you do no harm and you don't leave a mess behind you. If you screw up and take a database down, you make sure there's a backup that you can rebuild from. So that you can, and that's happened to me. So I accidentally took down a test environment with a spidering tool, and I had to retrieve it from a previous day's backup, so that the rest of the test team could carry on doing their work. But for about an hour, they weren't able to log in and do any testing at all. So it's important to remember that. And I could have got in trouble, but I took ownership of the problem and got it dealt with within an hour or so. And it meant staying late to get that fixed so that other people weren't affected when they came in the next day.
I guess also, like, let your sysadmins know if you're doing anything like this.
Yes, absolutely. If your sysadmins see any odd behaviour, they might lock you out or take the site down to investigate why it's doing that. It's important to have lots of monitoring over your test environments and production environments so that you can see any odd behaviour.
Yeah, we've had our sysadmins jump on. It was like a marketing company that one of our clients had hired was crawling the site.
Yeah.
And we were like, why is there so much traffic? What's going on? It's making the site slow. And we basically blocked. We were like, we blocked the marketing company from until we could get in contact with them and say, you need to let us know if you're going to do anything like this.
Yeah.
Because you've just knocked out, you're just knocking out the site for people. So even if it is just an internal test environment, if you don't know what monitoring your sysadmins have, assume they have it all.
Yeah, and schedule it with them and let them know well in advance that they can prepare for what work you're doing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, mm-hmm. that's a good thing to do, so they don't, like, you know, report you to your CSO and things like that.
You always want your sysadmins on your site.
Yeah,
always.
I was lucky in my last organisation that I had the buy-in from the chief security officer, so all the testing that I was doing had his backing. So I reported quite often directly to him from a security perspective, and he was incredibly supportive. And now I'm reporting directly to our head of testing engineering at Medidata, and she, her name's Sue, she has given me a lot of backing to be an advocate for security across the testing organization. So I go and train testers and support testers across the business. That's in here in the UK and in the United States. And, you know, because security is so important to us, and it's part of our targets for 2017-18 to ensure that, testers and developers have, you know, a broad knowledge of security and they are able to apply that knowledge in their planning and testing. So, you know, it's a challenge. It's a big challenge. But one of the things we have to do is make sure that we're aligned with the company goals and that we're communicating the testing that we're doing effectively. So, you know, that way we don't aggravate anyone. I also work quite closely with our InfoSec team as well. So I'm, you know, aligned with their goals too. Last.
So in summary, there's plenty of places that you can actually do this stuff without worrying about telling people or make sure you're not breaking any laws.
Yep.
If you do want to do it in a more professional or for your work or whatever environment, get permission from anyone who seems remotely relevant, sysadmins, if you've got a security officer or anything, them, or I would go to our technology director at my work, for example, because I figure even if he's not the person to tell, he will know who to tell.
He would. Or they would.
Just that kind of thing. And just make sure you get permission and you tell people.
Yes.
First, before you start faffing around on a live site.
It's essential. Yep.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you so much again for giving up your time to come on the show.
Not at all. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Do you want to put your Twitter and blog out there and podcast so people can catch you on the internet elsewhere?
Yep. So my Twitter is at the test doctor. And they can email me or get hold of me via that, or I'm on the various Slack channels for the testing community that they have, Ministry of Testing Slack and so on. I also help, I'm a co-host on the Screen Testing podcast with Neil Studd, which I believe you're a guest on soon.
Yes, I'm very excited about being, I've never been on someone else's podcast before, so I'm so excited.
Crossing the podcast streams here.
Yes, exactly. It's going to be great.
It's going to be great. Can't wait.
Yes. Excellent. So yeah, I'll chat to you soon.
Thank you, Gemma. It's been a pleasure.
Cheers.
Take care.
And there you have it. I told you it was a good episode. So yes, let's talk about test.xyz is where you'll find the show notes with links to pretty much everything we've spoken about, Dan's GitHub, everything else. If there's anything missing or if you want to add to it, just give me a shout and I will add to it. If you want to give me a shout, at Let's Talk Tests on Twitter, letstalkabouttests@gmail.com. You can leave a comment on the post at letstalkabouttests.xyz. There are plenty of ways to get in contact. I will be back in 2 weeks' time with the next episode. See you then. Bye.
Our planet would be just a point of light.